I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Life is a gift for which we are grateful. Gathered in community, we light our chalice to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this gift. Words adapted from Marjorie Montgomery.
Each time we gather for worship, a new body is created. Never before has quite this same congregation come together, and never again. The weekly recreation of this faith community brings the possibility of new consciousness. Together may we see the familiar with new eyes, hear the familiar with new ears, sing and say the familiar with new voices. Come, let us worship together. Please rise now in spirit or in body for our hymn number 347 in the gray hymnal, Gather the Spirit.
Whom some of you might remember passed away from a brain tumor in January. In the months preceding Nick's death, my brother and I had several discussions about what happens at the moment of death and after death, if anything. We both want to believe that somehow the spirit of life so beautifully described in the UU hymn of the same name continues on in some form. We discussed how that may be pure love, the same love we are able to experience in human form but never quite see in its true essence, any more than we can see a soul if it exists. In a universe of infinite possibilities, why not? Yet asking the unanswerable question, "Where are you, Nick?" continues to emerge from my grief and sorrow. Trying to make sense of and cope with my nephew's death is intertwined with grieving the loss of my mother, who at age 95 lives at the Legacy Memory Care Facility in Pooler. 3 years ago, an MRI showed that she has white matter dementia. In Robert Frost's poem, Trial by Existence, he proposes the notion that the soul chooses the life. Did my nephew choose to have a short life, but one in which he completed graduate school in England, traveled all over Europe, married a young woman from Paris, and lived and worked in London with the love of his life? I want to hope that this could be true, that a fierce love was at the center of the choice his soul made to choose this brief life. On the other hand, I've had occasion to reflect back on the notion of what life is beyond the mortal incarnation, which the poet Wallace McCrae says occurs to relieve the monotony of infinity. Did my mother's spirit choose a long life in which she has outlived all of her friends and husband of 72 years? Is living with dementia a better choice than going back to an infinity of sameness? In the same universe of endless possibilities, why not? We collectively chose not to tell Mom about Nick's death. We try to avoid answering her questions about where her husband and parents are, redirecting her attention to something she likes or sees. I know that one of the Ten Commandments amounts to "thou shalt not lie," but we see these omissions, deflections, and distortions as kindnesses, not as white lies. Kindnesses which alleviate and prevent the sorrows inflicted by the truth. Like many of you, I grew up Catholic and practiced Catholicism until age 18. I don't remember the exact number of another commandment, perhaps the fourth, which exhorts us to honor thy father and thy mother. I have always found it curious that the commandment does not command us to love them, just to respect them. Ancient wisdom from a realization that relationships with one's parents are fraught with strong feelings of conflict as well as feelings of affection. My relationship with my mother was not an easy one growing up, and when I left home for college at age 18, it was with the clear intention of never living under the same roof again. I freely admit these feelings with you makes me feel that I am not honoring her in the way the commandment intends. When my father was dying, I asked if there was anything I could do for him. He replied, "Take care of your mother." And so I do. It would seem that Catholic guilt and holy obligation never quite go away. But as it turns out that experiencing grief over these losses, I also began to discover the importance of forgiveness on the path to acceptance. When my mother isn't able to say my name, but instead says, "You are the one who looks like me," I can begin to draw comfort from looking in the mirror and seeing her face. When I look at the body of this woman and wonder, "Where are you, Mom?" I try to redirect myself towards providing a loving word or gesture. Mother Teresa often said that it isn't how much we do, but how much love we put into what we do. When I visit my mother, I try to keep love and patience at the forefront of my mind. I am the one here who bears witness to her life. My college roommate lost her 92-year-old mother to dementia. One of the last times she saw her mother said to her, "I don't know you, but I know I love you." And there it is, love at the center. That even if I don't know my mother any more than she knows me, I will remind myself that love and her soul are at the center.
Invitation to generosity. Let there be an offering to sustain in a strength this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. Words by Brandock Lovely. To donate via debit or credit card, please use the QR code on the back of the order of service, or go to www.uusavannah.org and click the donate button. Mailed checks are also welcome. Our offering will now be gratefully received. Thank you for your generosity.
Spring, the sweet spring, is the year's pleasant king. Then blooms each thing, then maids dance in a ring. Cold doth not sting, the pretty birds do sing. Cuckoo, chuck, chuck, poo-wee, too-wee, too-woo. The bowl and bay make country houses gay. Lambs frisk and play, the shepherd pipes all day. And we hear a bird sing this merry day. Cuckoo, chuck, chuck, poo-wee, too-wee, too-woo. The fields breathe sweet, the daisies kiss our feet. Young lovers meet, old wives a-sunning sit. In every street, these tunes our ears do greet. Cuckoo, chuck, chuck, poo-wee, too-wee, too-woo. Spring, the sweet spring.
May there always be pinch hitters when we need one. May our foul balls be few and far between. If we feel we need to be daring, may we safely steal second. When our friends and family require it of us, may we be willing to sacrifice. May we always reach home safely. And thus may spring and all the rest be winning seasons for us in the game that is life.
Climb every mountain, search high and low, follow every byway, every path you know. Climb every mountain, ford every stream, follow every rainbow, till you find your dream, a dream that will need all the love you can give. Every day of your life, for as long as you live, climb every mountain, ford every stream, that will need all the love you can give. Every day of your life, for as long as you live, climb every mountain, ford every stream,
first reading this morning, a poem by Edward Hirsch, Mergers and Acquisitions. Beyond junk bonds and oil spills, beyond the collapse of savings and loans, beyond liquidations and options on futures, beyond basket trading and expanding foreign markets, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Standard & Poor's Stock Index, mutual funds, commodities, beyond the rising tide of debits and credits, opinion polls, falling currencies, the signs for LA Gear and Coca-Cola Classic, the signs for US Steel and General Motors, high-grade copper, municipal bonds, domestic sugar, beyond Faxit and collateral buildups, beyond mergers and acquisitions, leveraged buyouts, hostile takeovers, beyond the official policy on inflation and the consensus on happiness, beyond the national trends in buying and selling, getting and spending, the market stalled and the cost passed on to consumers, beyond the statistical charts on prices, there is something else that drives us, some rage or hunger, some absence smoldering like a childhood fever vaguely remembered or half perceived, some unprotected desire, greed that is both wound and knife, a failed grief, a lost radiance. And from the poet Naomi Shihab Nye, Gate A4. Wandering around the Albuquerque Airport terminal after learning my flight had been delayed for 4 hours, I heard an announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of Gate A4 understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate A4 was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian embroidered dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor wailing. Help, said the flight agent. Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late, and she did this. I stooped to put my arm around the woman and spoke haltingly. Shudo, ashabid uk habidi, stani shwe, min fadlik, shubit siwi. The minute she heard any words she knew, however poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought the flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for a major medical treatment the next day. I said, no, we're fine. We'll get you there just later. Who's picking you up? Let's call him. We called her son. I spoke to him in English. I told him I would stay with his mother till we got on the plane and ride next to her. She talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad, and he and she spoke for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, they had 10 shared friends. Then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call some Palestinian poets I know and let them chat with her? This all took up 2 hours. She was laughing a lot by then, telling of her life, patting my knee, answering questions. She had pulled a sack of homemade mamoul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts from her bag, and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar. And smiling. There is no better cookie. And then the airline broke out free apple juice from huge coolers, and 2 little girls from our flight ran around serving it, and they were covered with powdered sugar too. And I noticed my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country tradition. Always carry a plant, always stay rooted to somewhere. And I looked around the gate of late and weary ones, and I thought, this is the world I want to live in, the shared world. Not a single person in that gate, once the crying of confusion stopped, seemed apprehensive of any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women too. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. Here end the readings. Will you rise in body or spirit for hymn number 404, What Gift Can We Bring?
Oh,
I once had a colleague who was fond of saying when introducing the offering, "We are blessed in this life, not according to what we earn or deserve, but solely in accordance with our capacity to receive." And I knew a congregant who sat in the pew and fumed every time he heard those words. "Tell that to a neglected child," he'd mutter, "or an abused spouse, or a homeless person. It's just another way of blaming the victim." I respected both of these individuals. They're both long gone. I can name them. One was my childhood minister, the other my father. I learned a lot from peeking through each one's unique and thoughtful perspective on life. So their dueling points of view on this matter long rattled around in my head, seeking reconciliation. I eventually came to believe that the crux of the dilemma was that my colleague was teetering on the very fine line between a theology of abundance and a theology of prosperity. And the congregant, Dad, was registering his fear that the minister had gone too far toward prosperity. I'm going to talk about abundance today, but I'm going to start with prosperity because they are too often confused. Prosperity is a popular theory. I hesitate to call it a theology, though it is often preached in churches, that I find disturbing. You may have heard it referred to as the secret, the law of attraction, health and wealth, name it and claim it, or the prosperity gospel. Whatever one calls it, it has been around a while. I found references to books such as Think and Grow Rich dating back to at least 1937. In recent years, Wayne Dyer, Joel Osteen, Rhona Byrne, and others write and preach this gospel. Joel Osteen has proclaimed, "It's God's will for you to live in prosperity, not poverty. It's God's will for you to pay your bills and not be in debt." Wayne Dyer has written, "There is no way to prosperity. Prosperity is the way." And Rhona Byrne's The Secret website advises, "Love yourself and know that you are deserving and worthy of an abundance of money. And speak and act and think from the mindset of being wealthy now. Eliminate thoughts and words of lack, such as, 'I can't afford it, it's too expensive.'" Dangerous thoughts and admonitions, all of them, to my mind. Made more dangerous because they are often mixed in with such innocuous statements as, "A good thing to remember is somebody's got it a lot worse than we do," and God wants to bless us where we are, and "Love what you do, and if you give, you will be blessed." It can be difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff, abundance from prosperity, yet it is vital to do so. Rhona Byrne wraps The Secret in the language of science, claiming that thoughts are magnetic, so that what one thinks attracts more of the same. If you think you are wealthy, you become wealthy. Clergy who preach the prosperity gospel claim to trace it to the Bible, citing such passages as Malachi 3:10, "Bring the full tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house, and thus put me to the test, says the Lord of hosts. See if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you an overflowing blessing." Critiques abound, refuting both the science and the biblical interpretations. I find all the arguments persuasive from the simple observation that according to the actual laws of science, opposites attract, not like, to the myriad Bible passages that suggest Jesus' compassion for the poor and his contempt, not for wealth per se, but for those who allow wealth to interfere with their consideration of matters of greater importance. For me, the most direct and salient critique of The Secret, The Law of Attraction, Health and Wealth, and all the rest comes from the scholar Milman Harrison of UC Davis, who observes, "Philosophically, their main way of helping the poor is engaging people not to be poor. Any theology that would suggest such a thing is both irresponsible and cruel." While I don't hold prosperity in high regard as it is used by those who preach and teach it, I'm a firm believer in abundance. I believe the universe and our lives within it are awash in abundance. Food, beauty, relationships, experiences, possibilities abound. Most of you know the story of the loaves and fishes. After Jesus spent a day preaching in a remote location, his disciples came to him, fretting that mealtime was approaching and the multitude must be fed. They had between them just 5 loaves and 2 fish, meal enough for perhaps 6 or 8 people, not nearly 1,000 times that number. Jesus blessed the food and ordered it distributed. And the story tells us all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets of the broken pieces and of the fish. Those who had eaten the loaves numbered 5,000. This is not the story of a miracle, though it is often referred to in that way. It is a story of abundance. A natural, not supernatural, abundance that is made manifest whenever we open ourselves to the common good and share of our hearts and our possessions and our food as we are able, much like the unfolding of events in Nahomi Shahab Nye's Gate 4A. I reiterate, I believe the universe and our lives in it are awash in abundance. Food, water, healthcare, natural beauty, educational opportunities, works of art, justice, relationships, experiences, possibilities. There are distribution problems, no argument. Too often, too much is in the hands of too few. And in recent years, the inequitable distribution of abundance has increased exponentially. Nevertheless, there is abundance. And here's where my colleague had it right. Often, not always, but often, especially in middle-class North America, we need only open our hearts and lives to receive the abundance. We need the vision to see what is offered to us, such as working under the sky with vistas most people never see, at congregations that both welcome us just as we are and allow us to grow into who we may be. We need the vision and we need heart, courage to accept the abundance, even when, especially when it means acknowledging our interdependence, accepting limitations on doing it all and getting it all for ourselves, by ourselves, ourselves alone. Prosperity is a far different thing. While abundance calls for not only opening our hearts to receive, but also to give toward the common good, prosperity, as is commonly preached, is about the individual accumulation of wealth, good, health, blessings. And worse than that, because it says all you have to do is think about being wealthy and you will become wealthy, all you have to do is believe you will get what you want and you will get what you want, because prosperity says these things, it is, as that congregant used to retort, very much like, if not exactly like, blaming the victim. If all you have to do is believe and God will bless you, then what does it mean if you are poor? You do lack the means to support your family. You do fall ill. The logical conclusion is that it must mean that you are at fault for not believing enough, for not thinking the right thoughts, for not attracting the wealth you deserve. Though it has appealed to thousands, millions of people, Though it has been acclaimed by some as giving the poor and underserved a sense of their own power and possibilities, I believe this underlying message is, as I said, both irresponsible and cruel. To put it another way, the narrator of this morning's story initially viewed the world through the lens and her family's finances through the lens of prosperity. Over the course of their discussion, her parents helped her shift toward a lens of abundance. Still, Mountain Girl has a point. Families do need cash as well as spectacular vistas, and churches need cash too. Our board here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah set a goal of $180,000 for our 2026-2027 stewardship campaign. The discussion leading up to the decision that set that goal took, as we say, a minute. We discussed all the things. $180,000 is more than last year's goal, which we met by just a whisker. Yet despite the death of one of our most generous donors, we met last year's goal. Some people have left the church, taking with them their significant pledges. But attendance, including online and in-house, regularly numbers over 100 children and adults, on par or slightly above last year's attendance, despite the folks who have stopped attending. Wouldn't it be discouraging, demoralizing, if we set such a goal and failed to meet it? Maybe. But the spirit of hope and possibility is palpable here, Sunday after Sunday and at other times. Great music, soul-touching life at the center offerings, a packed house for singing the resistance, a group of newer members and longtime members gathering for coffee each week before service, revitalized covenant groups. But the times we live in, enough said. Still, 17 new people have become members since this time last year. Back and forth, yes, but, yes, and, prosperity, abundance. Our immediate past president, Steve Hutter, during his 2 years on the board, used to urge us to step forward in faith. This year's president, Jessica Levitt O'Tara, spoke of being aspirational. So in the end, the goal of $180,000 was set with no dissenting votes. More than any of the considerations I recounted just now, I believe the board was called to the decision it made by two factors: its sense of this congregation's abundance and its sense of this congregation's generosity. I'll get back to our pledge drive in just a moment. First, let me say a few words about generosity unconnected to the congregation. Generosity arises from individuals and communities truly living with and from a place of abundance. Generosity is the natural outpouring of love, time, service, expansive connectedness, and money that flows freely from a deep and abiding sense of abundance. Generosity is what our board and I believe will flow from each of you and all of you together to meet our stewardship goal. We know, because you tell us and because we sense it in our every encounter with you, we know you know this congregation to be a well of abundance. Abundant welcome, abundant spirit, abundant laughter, abundant justice-making, abundant service within and beyond our congregation, abundant opportunities to deepen faith and explore meaning, to become increasingly anti-racist, to care for the planet, abundant friendship, abundant dedication to the values of Unitarian Universalism with love at the center. And because we know you experience and participate in the abundance of this congregation, we believe this year's stewardship campaign, officially wrapping up today, will be a loaves and fishes moment. We might fall short of 180,000 and lose the World Series, but we believe we'll at least bring home the pennant. It won't happen, however, simply by the board and me willing it so. As Derek Jeter said, you don't just accidentally show up in the World Series. We need you to step up to the plate and hit it all out of the ballpark. And because we are awash in abundance, we believe you will do it. We believe if you haven't made a generous pledge yet, you will do so today. The QR code is on the insert to your order of service. Or you can get a paper pledge form from a board member after the service. And we believe that some of you who have already made your pledge will generously revise it upward, knowing that we haven't yet rounded third base and headed home. And you want that pennant for all of us. Now, lest you think I'm teetering on the brink of prosperity gospel, let me be clear. We don't, or at least I don't, believe that because we think you will be generous, you will be generous. Our belief in your generosity is grounded in and grows out of what we know about you, about your experience in and love for this congregation. To repeat myself, we believe your generosity will flow from your sense of abundance, both in this church and in your private lives, from your understanding that the pew you are occupying is a pew where rich people sit, and your kitchen table is a table where rich people sit. And it will flow from your abundant gratitude that this church was here when you needed to discover it, from your abundant desire to ensure that it is here when the next person or family who needs it comes looking. Prosperity, said Calvin Coolidge, is only an instrument to be used, not a deity to be worshipped. It may be that most of us are feeling far, far from prosperous in this perilous time. We can rejoice, nevertheless, in our abundance and use that as an instrument to bless our beloved church and the communities it serves. Amen.
Amen.
Our closing hymn is in the Teal Supplement, number 1024, When the Spirit Says Do. We will sing it through four times. Spirit says do, Spirit says laugh, Spirit says give, Spirit says do. Please rise in body or spirit.
Spirit says,
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.